Chatez. Okay, so regardless of where we're holding here, it's definitely a worthwhile Chatez. Okay, so you're definitely on track. It's definitely a worthwhile goal to try to finish this parak, at least on your own, during this semester. It's both doable and very appropriate. And even though we're behind in terms of the shiurim we've been having, I don't even catch up with you, it doesn't matter because it doesn't stop you from going ahead. And also, it happens to be within this parak, the topics are such that they sprawl over the whole parak anyway. So do not feel bound by where we're up to. And definitely plow ahead. But I want to add some points to what we were talking about. We were talking about when we last discussed this parak, which was a while ago, the bottom of Chaf Gimel Amud Beis with Dalet Amud Aleph. About 200 degrees in here, right?
Yeah, that's why I turned off the heat and opened all the windows.
Okay, it doesn't seem
to be.
Yeah. All right. So I guess that's a sign of climate change.
But
So we had talked about this idea that you return an aveda to a Talmid Chacham if he has a tviya sayin, if he can claim by looking at it that it's his. And that led us into a very important but somewhat tangential sugya of the shanus b'nei hashalom, of when one can say something that's not true for the purposes of peace. And the reason it was connected to our Gemara is because the Gemara defines that sorba mirabanan, the Talmid Chacham, as somebody who is consistently honest, who's not mishana b'diburo. And the Gemara in that context said there were a couple of cases where a Talmid Chacham could change the facts, could say something not strictly factual, and still be considered enough of an honest person, or a completely honest person rather, to get his aveda returned. And that got us onto the whole sugya of Mishana b'nei hashalom, which is not mentioned in the Gemara as one of the examples, and the question was raised why it isn't. And there are basically two answers in the Rishonim, because we all acknowledge that there is a sugya in Yevamos, which makes it very clear that it's probably not only permissible to be Mishana for Shalom, but it's actually a mitzvah. And therefore, some of the Rishonim say that's the reason it's left out of the Gemara, because it's a mitzvah. So clearly, that doesn't hurt your reputation. And the things mentioned in the Gemara are optional cases, which need to be mentioned, as opposed to Shalom, which is self-evident. And other Rishonim, such as Tosus over here, understood that these were all subsets of Shalom. So the Gemara was mentioning Shalom. So either Shalom is off the list because it's too obvious to be on the list, or it is the list. So either way, it's certainly applicable. But there are other details of the sugya we didn't get a chance to address, so just to talk about it for a moment. So first of all, we're at a moment of super synergy here, because this exactly correlates to something we were talking about in our Ian Shir when we last left off on Wednesday. So it's an exact point of tangency between what we were up to there and we're up to here, so it's a good opportunity to connect the two. So the Rishonim and the Acharonim discuss, why is it that we should make this leniency? If we normally require simanim, so why should we give a break to the Talmid Chacham? Why should we give it back to somebody who has a status of an honest Torah scholar? So B'chanan and the Kovei Haaretz explains it based on the Ran, which we mentioned on Wednesday. Again, it's an exact tangency here. The Ran in Chulin and Daf Tzadi Hei, the Ran says that if you have a third party, if you have a witness, an Eid Echad, who testifies that the property belongs to so-and-so, if, let's say, Michael comes to me and testifies that this recorder belongs to David, so then I can return it to David without Siman. That's the Ran's position. The Ritva and Sechas Gittin happens to disagree.
One aid,
correct. Right. Two aids, that would do it for sure. But one aid, that I can do as well. And the premise of the Ran is that since Michael is testifying on behalf of David, so Michael doesn't get anything out of it, that's the assumption. Even though you'd think if this was a well-known halacha, there'd be an easy motive to cut somebody in. But apparently he's not nogeya b'davar, he's not going to benefit from it at all. So we have no reason to think he's lying, so we will believe him. And we mentioned on Wednesday that this was a somewhat controversial position, because it's a question, does an Eid Echad accomplish anything in the context of Mamonos? We know that an Eid Echad is effective in the context of Kashrus, but is an Eid effective in the context of Mamonos at all? The Torah tells us you need two Eidim. So does that leave any space for one Eid to have any kind of credibility? So in the context of our first parak discussion, we saw the position of the Rush, that the Rush says that yes, an Eid Echad is effective because he can get you out of a Shvuah. If you have to take a Shvuah and you have an Eid Echad saying that the law is on your side, the facts are on your side, that can get you out of a Shvuah. And that was a controversial position. The Sheikh Shmaisa disagreed and basically quoted the Rush as saying the opposite of what he says. So how he understands the Rush is a different question. But the Sheikh Shmaisa assumed that an Eid Echad cannot accomplish anything in the realm of Mamonos. So the question is, what about this Ran? So there are a couple of ways to address the Ran in and of itself. And then we can discuss whether it contradicts any Gemaras later on in the parable. But one way to say it, so the Kovei Tzaaros marshals this Ran on behalf of the Talmud Chacham, and says that essentially, since the Ran says we can give the Aveda back on the authority of an Eid Echad, so therefore this Talmud Chacham can get it back like an Eid Echad. Now we have to fill in a step over there, because the premise of the Ran is that the Eid Echad is a third party. Right, it's not Negei Aveda. But it's not like we're dealing with actual Eidus. And it's interesting in general, because normally we talk about Eid Echad Nem and Bisurim. There's a lot to try to figure out about what is the status of that Eidus. Is that real testimony in the category of actual Eidus? Or it's not really Eidus at all. There's no such thing as an Eid Echad, really, the Torah's Eidus. Sometimes there's credibility. That's all we need. Or there's information. That's all we need. And an Eid Echad can provide that. But as an aid, Torah's Eidus, so then maybe there's no such concept. So why would that be relevant here? Because when it comes to Hilchos Eidus, there's no exception to the Negiah issue. The issue that somebody might be Negei Avedavar, that somebody who's involved is disqualified as an aid. So we don't care how credible they are. And the Gemara talks about in the context of Krovim being possible. That we say relatives are possible. So the Gemara says, we don't care if these relatives are Moshe and Aaron. Right? They could be the two most distinguished, honest Jews in history. But their brothers are possible Eidus, it doesn't matter who they are. So when we're talking about actual Eidus, there's no exceptions. But when it comes to the Ne'amanus of an Eid Echad, so then, that's not really the case. And the most common circumstance when we use Eid Echad Nem and Bisurim in our own lives, when is that? What would you say is the most common example?
Kashrus.
And the most common example of that case of Kashrus? Sorry? Our mothers, our wives, and our family members who tell us that their own food is kosher and we believe them. That's because of Eid Echad Nem and Bisurim. So these are involved parties, and we believe them. Now, when they're restaurants, it gets more complicated because there really is a monetary motivation that can really skew things. So we generally require independent hashgacha in order to be the Eid Echad Nem and Bisurim for a financially driven kashrus issue. But when it's there's no real financial motive, but it's still people who are involved, so we trust our mothers and our wives to say that the food that they cook is kosher. So here, it could be what the Ran is saying, that one aid is good enough. And it's not Mihilchus Aidus. So all we need to do, when he says he's not Nogei Vadover, because he's a third party, and the example we gave was Michael testifying on behalf of David, so he could mean that it's not that we need halachically for it to be a non-Nogei Vadover. It means that we're just afraid, this is pretty much what the Ran kind of says, is that we're afraid of a meshaker. But because he has no motive to be meshaker, he has no motive to lie because he's not going to benefit. So we have no reason to suspect Michael of not telling the truth. So we have a person who has no reason to not tell the truth, and then Erechad is enough. Now, if the whole premise is that Tamar Chacham has a chezkas telling the truth, that the Tamar Chacham has established his reputation as being consistently honest, so then, even though that's different than what the Ran says, but you can plug it in. If the Ran says a third party has no chash, he's not telling the truth. So we could say also that a Talmud Chacham also doesn't have a chash, even though he's no gay, even though he's talking about it for himself. But maybe a Talmud Chacham talking about himself is like a stam person being spoken about by a third party. So that could be one way of explaining it. Could also explain it the way the Pri Yitzchak says it. Pri Yitzchak, we mentioned in the past, is the Chuvitz of Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer with the Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. The whole halacha of Drisha Simanim in the Torah, what does that mean? It means that we don't really have a way of being mevarer that this object belongs to this person. That's not what the Torah demands of us with Hashavas Aveda. What the Torah says is the way the Gemara interprets the drasha of Adrosha Chicha Ima. So what does the Torah demand? Darshehu Shelo Yehei Rama. So if you focus on it for a second, it's that we're not asking you to clarify the item is his. We're asking you to clarify the guy is not a liar. So the simonim are helpful to show that he's not lying in this case. But if we have an independent verification that he's not a liar, so that itself should do it. So the reputation of being a Talmud Chacham, that should affect the same goal. Now it's interesting, you could clarify, so then maybe it should also work, that if, in the case we described before, Michael and David, let's say Michael says, this happens to me all the time when I enter Belfer, and security is giving somebody a hard time, right, so let's say Michael says to me, I have an aveda that I'm going to return it. David wants me to return it to him. So this case we said before is that Michael says that David is the owner of the object, and according to the Ran, I can believe him based on that. But what if Michael comes and says, listen, I have no idea about this object, but I've known David for many months, and I know that he's an honest person, and I testify to his general honesty that he's not a Rama. So maybe that could work too, if that's the way we understand it. The whole point is this examination is only to clarify that he's not a rabbi. So then maybe that's also going to be enough. That's just a speculation. Maybe that could also work. The third way to say it, these are all slight variations on each other and they have overlapping points. This is really what we said on Wednesday, which is the explanation of the Shari Yosha. And the Shari Yosha's point, again, is a point that we've mentioned in the past that's relevant to this entire parak. That the question is, why don't we always give the Aveda back to whoever claims it? We should always say that if somebody comes and claims the Aveda, he should get it right away. Why? Because, let's say I find the object, David claims it. So David says it's mine, even if he doesn't bring any simanim. So he is a bari. He's sure it's his. I don't have any reason to think it's not his. I don't think it's mine. And I don't believe with any confidence that it belongs to anyone else. So I'm not contradicting him. I'm a shema. I say, I don't know. Maybe it's yours, maybe it's not yours. So it's a situation of bari v'shema. Now, even if we pass in, as we seem to, that bari v'shema is not enough to take something away from a muhzak. But I'm not a muhzak when it comes to the Aveda, probably. There's what to quibble about that. Let's assume I'm not a muhzak when it comes to the Aveda. I'm just the person who's holding on to it because he found it. So under those circumstances, Bari should win. So Bari and Hashemah against a Tofes. That was a question that Pnei Yeshua, the Zechus Ksubas, raised. Hi.
The reason why you're not into the muhzak is because it's a did you say milk cycling, which is like indicative of like ownership of something, and since
right,
you're
exactly.
saying it's not yours, so
it's the same right. It's the same chiluk that we've used in the context of shnei morchus and betalis. Right, that we said that the fact that somebody is holding something could have different levels of significance. It might mean that we have reason to believe it's historically his, and that's really the absolute muhsa kind of category. And that he's holding it in a sense that we have reason to believe he's always owned it. Or it could be that he's holding it in a way where it's clear that it was not historically there, it just happens to be holding it right now, which we'll call a toface, which could be meaningless in some context because it's not a chazaka. Right, we discussed, you know, for example, Migul Hotzi and the Ksos, that whole story. Or it could be meaningful because at least it's a default. So it's a status quo, but not a status quo because it shows us any proof of anything. It's just better than absolute zero. So, okay, here's a toe face. I'm a toe face right now. Now, the reason you could quibble is we discussed that there are those who may argue that the Shomer Aveda is machzik on behalf of the loser. Right, we discussed that, we talked about Yehemunach, remember when we talked about the very first daf, that maybe a third party may be considered a machzik on behalf of others, and that's a little bit of a complicated discussion. Yeah, Michael?
Is the question why we need to money?
Yes, basically the question is why don't I say that if the guy comes and claims it, I give it to him. He's a bari, I'm a shema. So says Rav Shimon Shkab, former Rebbe in our yeshiva, in the Shari Osher, in Sharvav, that you're right. As far as Hilchos Mamonos are concerned, we would give it back to you. Basic Choshen Mishpat rules would be that plugging the Choshen Mishpat into the computer would be that the claimant should get it. But there's a special religious obligation, a mitzvah in the Torah, in Parshas Kiseitse, that you have to be Dairish, that you have to demand some type of standard in conjunction with the personal religious obligation of the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Now he goes on to say, so you could say, well listen, okay, so that's all very nice and good, you have a personal religious obligation, but if Hilchos Mamonos tells me that David has entitlement to it, so why should I deprive him of his property because of my personal religious obligation? You have to say more that it's more than a personal religious obligation. It's a ritual rule that affects not just me, but affects the property also. That the halacha imposes upon this property a mitzvah that it remains in my custody until somebody proves it. But in any event, it's not about mominus. It's about establishing that I can fulfill my mitzvah properly. So therefore, says Rav Shimon Shkab, so maybe normally simonim is the standard, but maybe other things can be the standard also. So maybe an eid echad, like the Ran, can be the standard. Or maybe tfiyas ayin of a talmid chacham can be the standard. There could be a number of things that all qualify as meeting the threshold for my mitzvah of hashavas aveda. He also uses this to explain that the Shmeisa that we mentioned on Wednesday, it says that you don't do anything based on an Eid Echad, even in Mamonos. So he brought a different proof. He brought a proof from a Gemara on Daf of Chesim and Aleph over here, that the Gemara says that if you have a conflict between two people, and one person has Simon, another person has a Simon, so among the examples, the Gemara says that simanim the simanim ve'ed echad. One person has a simon, and the other person has both a simon and an ed echad. So then yaniach, you have to leave it there. You can't give it back to the guy based on the ed echad. So says the Sheikh Shmaisa, okay, you see, we don't follow the ed echad. That here these two people are equal, and one of them has an ed echad. It doesn't help them at all. So apparently we don't follow an Eid Echad in Mamonos or including Hashavas Aveda. So says Rav Shimon Shkab, no, because the reason you don't follow the Eid Echad there is because you have two clashing claimants. So when the two people are claiming against each other, so let's say now Aaron comes and claims it and David comes and claims it, and David still has Michael on his side. Okay, so when it's Michael trying to get it out of me, so fine, the Eid Echad could work, because I don't really have any actual claim on this item. But when it's Aaron and David up against each other head to head, So then the Eid Echad is not significant in order to change the equation. And that's not going to be enough to make a different decision. But by itself, if there was no clash, and it's just a question of who I give it to, so I'm allowed to rely on the Tamachach. So basically, three different overlapping explanations, which all have elements of each other. But either you could say straight out like the Ran, because Eid Echad is Ne'aman, and we'll tweak it a little bit to allow the person himself to be the Eid Echad because of his established honesty. Or the way the Pri Yitzchak says that we're not looking to clarify who this item belongs to, that's out of our hands. We're just looking at the mitzvahs just to clarify that he's not a liar, he's not a rami, and therefore maybe his reputation isn't enough to do that. Which prompted us to speculate what would be if there was an Eid Echad testifying to his honesty. Would that be enough? Or a third possibility, that really I'll be in Choshen Mishpat, I should give it to him anyway. I should give it to everybody. But the Torah says I have to be Dorish Simanin, telling me there's a certain threshold for my mitzvah, my ritual obligation of the Shabbos Aveda that has to be met, and maybe therefore Tamachachim is equal to that threshold. Okay, so far so good? Anything make sense? Okay, so again, this is really a kind of a narrow din, but it's a din that reflects a lot about the themes of the entire parak, about what the whole concept of Simanim calls for, so that's itself relevant. There is another interesting aspect. There's a Gemara Masechet Shabbos and Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, that the Gemara actually has a whole different standard for why it is that you, or what you look for when you return a Aveda to a Tamachach and a Tzviya Sain. It's interesting. The Gemara really just says something completely different. The Gemara says, what is the kind of a Tamachachim who would get an Aveda back to Tzviya Sain? So the Gemara says, a Tamachachim who's makbid on his chaluk, he's makbid on his garment, that he wears the garment in such a way, that they had garments in those days, it was a little less obvious what was inside out and outside in. It was actually, I guess, the same thing. But what was inside out and outside out is a little less obvious. But the Maisa, there's one side that shows all the seams and all the stitches, and one side that doesn't. So Tamar Chacham was careful enough to wear his garment so that the stitches are inside rather than outside. That's the kind of Tamar Chacham to whom you can return an Aveda B'Tzviya Sain. So what does that standard mean? And is this a steer in the Gemaras? So it's interesting, some of the Rishonim don't record that Gemara at all. The Rush, the Rif, the Rambam don't acknowledge that Gemara at all. The Shulchan Aruch actually does mention both requirements to be Machzer and Aveda, the Tviya Sain. That he have a reputation for honesty and that he wears his garment in such a way. And some Achronim explain that it represents two different standards. That the two different issues. On the one hand, we need to know, and this kind of correlates to other issues we've talked about in the past, so we need to know that he's honest, and we need to know that he's right. So the reputation for honesty is what we need to know that he's telling the truth. But maybe this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Maybe he's such a luftmensch, right? Maybe he's such a Talmud Chacham, and his head is in the sky so much that he's so occupied with lofty things that he doesn't know the difference between an iPhone and a BlackBerry. So he says, yeah, my phone is the one that has the buttons. Yeah, that's mine. So how do you know that he knows what he's talking about enough to trust him? Doesn't know the difference between a first-generation iPad and a new iPad. It's like it's all the same. So therefore, a Talmud Chacham has enough awareness of these things that he wears his garment in such a way that it looks more mechubedik. That's the kind you can assume he has enough sensitivity to these issues that he can tell the difference between different objects. So perhaps we need to accommodate both standards. We need to know that he is honest, that he's going to tell you the truth, and that even if he's honest, he can tell the difference between different items, and he's not going to think they all look the same to him, and therefore his claim will be meaningful. The Rishonim also discuss over here that this whole idea of giving back to a Tamar Chacham without a simon. So it seems to undermine the whole perek. And the whole perek we're dealing with, if there's a simon, you have to be macheres, and if there's no simon, then you don't have to be macheres, and then there'll be yayish, and then you can keep it. So wait a minute, if there's a class of people out there who can get the property back without simon, so then doesn't that undermine everything that we're working off of? So the Rishonim raised this question. Some say, Tosfos says, that we're talking about something which is not the kind of thing people will ever recognize with Tfilas Zayin. So let's say if you have an item which has just got no kind of uniqueness to it at all, so it's not shayach that even the Talmud Chacham is going to show up and be able to say, I recognize it because it looks exactly like 100 other things. So then that would still fit into the major category of something that you now have to the machers. And other Rishonim, such as the Ramban and others, they suggest that it depends on where you found something. So if you found something in the Beis Medrash, where it's likely that there will be Talmidei Chachamim who will possibly come forward and be Tovei or something with Tfilas Zayin, so then that would be one thing. Then you would be Chayel Hafers. But you find something while you're on vacation in the middle of the desert somewhere, and it's not too likely that there are any Talmidei Chachamim around there, so then you could assume that we don't have to worry about this, and you're not Chayel Hafers, and look for a Talmidei Chacham to come forward and claim that it is. That's an important issue. It's also interesting, so we know that our years in yeshiva impose a different standard of living sometimes, so maybe it also imposes a whole different standard of a Shabbos Aveda, that maybe you have to assume that the makum shamatzu yitamin yafachamim, so then you have to be macher is even something which otherwise wouldn't have a simon, which has a lot of nafkamina. So for example, if somebody finds money in the base medrash, and normally money, as you see, doesn't have necessarily simonim to it, but maybe if the Talmidei Chachamim who are there, you could all assume that they have a Ne'amanus. So then if they claim they lost the money, you'll have to give it back to them, even if otherwise in a different setting, money is not going to be subject to having a sin. So these are some important concepts. So continuing from that Gemara, now the topic of Dal and Aleph, the Gemara has kind of a wild case, which was the topic of a lot of discussions as well. The Gemara discusses, this is actually a little bit of Parsha synergy. It's a very appropriate Vayeshev topic. We really have a lot of synergy going on. But the Gemara here talks about a case right afterwards, right after telling us this din of the Talmud Chacham, in Chavdal and Ra'ala, 5 lines from the top, says, Marzutra Chasida, Ignev Le'kasa de Kaspa, Nehush Giza. So this is going to sound a little bit like a Miketz Vayigash topic, but you see also why it's a Vayeshev topic in a second, that the whole Parsha of Yosef is going to lead up to this, but there's a reason why it's not the Vayeshev topic, that he had a silver cup that was stolen when he was on a trip somewhere. And Chazil lahau bar beirav demashi yodei v'nogev v'glima dechadim. And he saw somebody, sounds like a yeshiva student himself, a bar beirav, who was wiping off his hands on somebody else's garment. So, what did he derive from that? Amar haynu hay lo yichpes le amor dechavra. So I see that this person doesn't care about his friend's property. He's willing to dirty somebody else's clothes without permission. So therefore I see that he's a person who is susceptible to stealing. A person who doesn't care about other people's property. So kaftei bo'odei. So they tied him down and he eventually confessed. They gave him some pretty serious interrogation. There was possibly some physical coercion that was involved also with some of the Rishonim discussed, and the Chafetz Chaim discusses this in Hilchos Lashon Hara, about when is the person justified to use such techniques. And here he assumes that it's only because of Rezeira's stature, that it was a Tzarach Shah. This is not a normal situation. But apparently they were able to aggressively interrogate him, and eventually he confessed. But it's very indicative, first of all, that you see that he was caught because of a casual attitude towards using somebody else's stuff without permission. And this is something that people are susceptible to all the time, and that they think that, okay, so I'm not really stealing in any serious way, but I'm not really taking something and keeping it in a way that's very blatant, so therefore I could, alright, so I'm going to use somebody's stuff in a minor way. But here, Zutra perceives that it's all connected, that if you have a casual attitude towards taking other people's property, so then it doesn't matter whether it's a big thing or a small thing. It means that you are somebody who's not makbid on Gneva, is not makbid on taking other people's stuff. And therefore we're able to suspect that you're somebody who's going to engage in behavior such as Gneva. And Taka apparently was right. Hi.
Are we allowed to assume Mechila being like very close friends?
So it's a tricky question. There are some situations, that's really what we saw Sugya earlier with the parrot, right? That there are some things that Bailin could be assumed to be Mechila, but we have to figure out, is it because it's really just nothing and therefore the relationship is such? So what happens if you do it in front of him? So does he say it's okay? You know, does he indicate, yeah, keep going? But then that's not enough. That's what the sugya earlier in the parak indicated. That you have to be able to discern, does he do that because he's too embarrassed to be makbid, because he feels that he'll look like a big captain if he's makbid, but he really wishes he could be makbid? Or does he do it because he really doesn't care and he gives you more to do with it? So that's essentially what the sugya earlier in the parak was kind of giving a broad outline for, that the basic rule of thumb is that you watch to see if the, ideally last relation, but if you want to know if there's really a mechila, so then you watch to see if the bailin allow it and don't interfere, and then that's not enough, you have to be able to ascertain that they're doing it not just because, they're not interfering, not only because socially they feel awkward objecting, but because they genuinely don't mind, and that they not only don't object, but they encourage it. So it's very easy to make a mistake with that. So it's a good policy to try to really be extra careful, because it's very likely that you don't really have a good indication whether the person is not makbid or not. So you're right, in theory there are circumstances where good friends and very minor things are not makbid on each other and there is implicit in the chila, but it's kedai to get that clarified because it is easy to make a mistake. And therefore, even though there's no hashava, less than hashava prutah, something like that, but there's still an iser gneiva and iser gzeila, so it's kedai to be careful. And the point that that's being made from this gemara is that you see that somebody who's not makbid about that, so it's an indication that somebody is not makbid on other things as well. And that it's probably a sign of larger gnevas that are there also. So why do I say this is a Vayeshev topic? So you can see why the missing cup is a Miketz topic, a Vayigash topic, but why is it a Vayeshev topic? So one of the major issues that comes up in Parshas Vayeshev is the Isser of Habanus Pnei Chaver Barabba. We know that Tamar is willing to let herself get executed so as not to embarrass Yehuda. And the Gemara in Masechet Bav Metzia, it's a Gemara in Hazav, maybe we'll get to it in the Kiyos agenda so we can talk about it at more length, but the Gemara Bav Metzia in Hazav understands from that episode that it's really terrible to be Malbim Pnei Chaver Barabim, you shouldn't embarrass someone in public, even if it means that your life is going to be at risk. Says the Gemara, Noach Oli Odom Shiachil Atzmo L'Kivshin Shalesh B'Al Yalbim Pnei Chaver B'Rabim. So there's a lot to try to figure out about that Gemara. We're not up to it yet, so we're not talking about it head on. But it's very, very difficult, because it's one thing to make the big leap and say that embarrassing people in public is Yehud V'Yavim. That itself is a very difficult topic, which Rishonim struggle with, Achronim struggle with. There's a lot that's shocking in that context. But even if you want to say that's the case, so let's say I put a gun to Avi's head and they say, I want you to humiliate Aaron. And so maybe you want to say, no, he's not allowed to do it because he can't even save his life to be mavaz an innocent person. But what if the person is not innocent? If you're on trial and the other person is guilty and you can exonerate yourself by saying who the guilty person is, very hard to believe you're not allowed to do that. So Mefarshim on Chumash had a very hard time with Tamar's behavior. Question also by Ben Noach, a Jew, the whole, what was the expectation then as a separate issue? But there's a lot in the Mefarshim on Chumash a very hard time with in terms of why that was the appropriate step. And Rav Asher Weiss has an essay, I think maybe in the Sefer Chumash, I don't remember, where he assumes that anything that you do in the course of justice is not subject to the whole history of Havanas Pnei Chaveru Barabu. And that we have to figure out Tamar, but the mice that a person is on trial for his life to say that he can't get himself exonerated by saying something that's going to be mavaza somebody else, it's really not Olal Adats. So that's a Vayesha topic in general. But Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach has a tshuva in the third chelik of his tshuvas, in the tshuvas of Menuchas Shlomo, where he writes, responding to somebody who wrote a sefer. And he wrote Ha'aris on the Sefer. So Shlomo Zalman in his tshuva discusses this gemara about Messiah Chavdalim Mel. So said, Nentes and then Aleph, we won't talk about, we're not up to that yet. But Chavdalim and Aleph, we're up to. So he discusses this gemara, and he says, the author of the Sefer was talking about whether or not you're allowed to be mevaza somebody in the context of Tviyas Mamon. If you believe somebody owes you money, and you believe that somebody stole from you, let's say, so are you allowed to demand the money from this person in such a way that could embarrass them? So in the context of that, Rosh Hashanah discusses this gemara. It sounds like Marzutra probably embarrassed this guy. So is that an indication that it's mutter to do so? So he was not so inclined to say that that's the case, especially in line with what the Chafetz Chaim said about the hitting people, that it seems like from this gemara that this was an extra legal situation, that Mar Zutra has special authority here that was with Sarach Shah, that was not the standard that was normally used. But he also discusses towards the end of the tshuva about a scenario where he's more inclined to be makel. He says, let's say that I think somebody in this room stole something from me. So I tell him privately that I think you have my item and I want you to empty your pockets. I want you to be searched to show that you're innocent or that you have my thing. So let's say that person says, I refuse to be searched unless you search everyone in the room, unless you search all the suspects. So is that permissible to do? So there, Shlomo Zalman was inclined to say that you could do that without embarrassing anybody. You can say that I know that this room is the room of the suspects because you're the people who were in the room. And I'm not necessarily impugning anyone's honesty, just saying that this is the sphere of suspects. So whoever it is, I'm not singling him out. I'm asking all of you to empty your pockets. So he assumes that that would be mutter. That's not directly embarrassing anyone. So, but his general inclination is that there is potentially an issue of Habanas Pnei Chaveru Barabim when it comes to being chaveya somebody, which is a difficult point because as others far point out, that if you ever sue somebody in Beis Din, so the very act of bringing somebody to court would seem to be embarrassing to them. So we have to assume, like Rav Asher Weiss assumes in his essay, that there is a justification when you're in the process of normal adjudication. So we have to figure out exactly how to balance the two, but this gemara over here is a major gemara that is cited. So it's just an interesting case to be aware of. So we're almost out of time. So again, I know I'm way behind where people are up to in Bikia, so keep plowing ahead, trying to get the whole parak done. We will skip around in terms of adding these points, in terms of giving a little bit of background, but a lot of these points are relevant to the whole parak, so again, don't worry about the shiurim being behind you. But in terms of synergy, so we are out of time, just at a perfect point. So God willing, tomorrow, on Monday, we will start the sugya of Moda B'Miktzas. And it happens to be that Rav Shlomo Zalman in the same tshuva that we're talking about So here's a perfect point of synergy, perfectly choreographed here, that he invokes to the end of the tshuva the whole question of modi v'miksa, that if you impose a shvua on another party, so to what extent do you have achrayas for the fact that they may lie, the fact that they may be forced to confess now because of the shvua, and may be embarrassed? So in the context of that tshuva, discussing this gemara and the chavdalat and aleph, so he invokes at the end the sugya of modi v'miksa. And the whole idea that you impose a shvua on this party, knowing that that may result in them being embarrassed, or may result in them, perhaps if you believe they're guilty, so they're either going to be humiliated or they're going to lie, either one should seem to be an unacceptable result. So that's a part of his tshuva, and that's exactly what we are up to in the first paragraph, and God willing, we will pick up from there tomorrow morning. Okay, Ashkach, everyone is here. Better than some past Sundays, but it's still...